Hi, welcome to the Wellness Doctors Podcast with Dr. Lorena
and Dr. Vanessa.
We are both medical doctors who talk about how to optimize health and well-being so that you can be empowered to make better healthy choices, enrich the lives of people around you, and join us in the evolution of healthcare. Hi everybody, it's Dr. Lorena Law here. I have to first start by apologizing that I've been away from this podcast for a very long time because a lot of things have happened in my clinical practice, and so I had to take a little break from it. But hopefully some of you are still subscribed to this channel and are glad that I'm back. And today I have a really special guest with me, and we're going to talk about the topic of women's hormones, particularly perimenopause and menopause. So welcome, Beth.
Thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be here.
So I have to get Beth to introduce herself. She's a very, very special friend, and I really have a lot of respect for her in terms of her professional achievements, but also in the area of coaching women through their hormones.
Thank you. Yes, well, I've known you for a long time, Lorena. Mm-hmm. We met probably well over 10 years ago. And I have a corporate day job. I'm a lawyer by day, but I'm also a functional medicine health coach. Mm-hmm. And a personal trainer. And Lorena and I share this huge passion for helping men and women, but in particular women, to optimize their health and help them navigate through various journeys or stages in their life.
Yeah, so I remember when I first met you, Beth, I think we were both on our journey for our own personal health, and we're exploring different ways of training and nutrition, and being in Hong Kong, it's a very, very small world. We kind of went off on our own journey to learn a bit more about this area, and particularly how lifestyle can really be a toolkit for us in terms of managing chronic illness, but also reversing them. And then after that, I think it was somehow when I saw your Instagram social media posts about metabolic health that I started to realize, wow, you know, this is such a great post and so much useful information, great tips that she's actually helping people with. And I thought, well, you know, if I were wanting to work with somebody as a coach, you know, because many of my patients that I see do need to have that accountability, but also that support in making some lifestyle changes, I thought, you know, who would I go to and who would I feel confident in referring to? And so I remember just messaging you and saying, hey, you know, what do you think about women's hormones and what can we do? And I have to say that some of it was kind of a bit selfish because I was going through that stage of my life, perimenopausal stage of my life. And realized that it kind of just hit me all of a sudden. And so then I realized, as a doctor, if that kind of just crept up on me and it took me by surprise, how many other women who are not in the area of medicine would be suffering from the symptoms and not realize that they could get help. So I reached out to you, and so now we are both training together in the gym, lifting heavy weights and
Lorena is kicking my backside. Actually, I watch in awe as she lifts twice as much as me. But we are definitely inspiring each other.
So it's great, and it's always great to be able to have someone who supports you through the process, even though some days you may not feel like you want to do what you know is best for you, but it's always a joy to be around. There's always positive energy no matter how difficult the training. I'm so grateful that she's there as my training partner. At the moment what we want to start doing is really create a conversation around the menopause transition. And because what we have also realized within our own experience of coaching and treating women is that there's a lot of shame, and there's a lot of confusion, and a lot of fear around this area.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I've been working with clients, and in particular women, for a number of years, and women have been experiencing these symptoms, but not necessarily recognizing what they were. And at the time, I think, if I'm being frank, I was scratching my head as well, like, you know, why are things not working in the way that they used to? And I often used to hear my clients say to me, I used to be able to lose 5 pounds, you know, in a month or whatever, but now nothing's working. Or I used to be able to change this and get this result. And I think when I was hearing that, I realized that I had to dig a little bit deeper to find out exactly what was going on. And that was the first time I started to dig a bit more deeply into hormones. And I think that's when I started to ask you questions, because I needed a real... I needed a doctor's input into it. I needed the science behind it to understand what was going on. And then I think the real shining light moment was when I started to notice symptoms in myself. You know, if things are not working quite like how they used to for yourself, that's when you start to really investigate a bit more deeply.
Yeah, and I started realizing, actually, now in hindsight, my own experience was, you know, always being very, very active. The sort of not that it's anything to do with being vain, but also noticing that you're much more easy to carry around a little bit of body fat, and that the way that you trained and how you slept and the mood swings actually were a part of that. And then also something else that a lot of women talk about is being forgetful, and for me that was really something that I knew, and I actually thought it was just age. I kind of put that down to age. Oh, I'm just getting older, so, you know, I'm not as organized and I forget things. But one of the key things also was not being able to recall certain words. And so we all worry about things like dementia, cognitive health, and I thought, am I really starting to lose my mind in my mid-40s or late-40s? Is this something I'm going to have to accept? And to some extent, I kind of thought, well, I just have to accept that. And so, and now when I actually speak to a lot of women who also say very similar things, was that, you know what, I forget things, and they are worried about their brain health. And there's a lot of shame around that, because nobody, even myself, I didn't want to admit that, you know, I would forget something, because as a professional, could you imagine like how that would look? And yet I was still trying to push through things. So I have to like write things down more often. I would have to like, you know, give myself a reminder, set an alarm.
Oh, yes.
All those things to really try to mitigate all the symptoms of menopause.
And I think you've hit on an important point, is that you don't necessarily recognize that it might be related to a decline in your hormones. And I know you know this, but for anyone listening, like, I came to Lorena because I was forgetting people's names. And I used to pride myself on teaching a class of people and asking everyone's names and remembering it, at least for the duration of the class. And then I was finding myself a few years ago, like, bumping into people who I knew really well and not being able to recall their name. And with that came a real fear. I was, you know, a fear of cognitive decline, potentially Alzheimer's. And probably everyone knows what the risk of Alzheimer's is, but there's not a predisposition for everyone to get it. And yet every single woman will go through menopause, and yet not every single woman knows about what the symptoms are. So I think it's really important, and one of the things that we're passionate about is providing women and men actually with the knowledge of what menopause entails, could potentially be. So if you do notice symptoms, then you can perhaps identify them sooner. You can reach out and have a proper conversation with your medical practitioner. You can get help around lifestyle. But you don't know what you don't know. So,
and that's so true, because you know, as a doctor, we weren't really given much training for menopause. And it's not necessarily the fault of the medical profession only, but it's, you know, partly there is there has been a shift in our lifespan. We are starting to live a lot longer, and as a result of that, a lot of the symptoms and the quality of life issues to do with not having hormones and menopause and postmenopause, it's becoming more important, because more and more of the type of population that we see are probably going to be without hormones until we start changing the conversation around it. And it's not just about hormones, it's also about what we need to do in terms of how we move, the quality of our sleep, the quality of our nutrition. Like, all those things do impact on our future health. But it's also highlighting that there is a increased risk for women in the midlife for various conditions, and one of them is actually depression, mood swings or low mood and anxiety. And a lot of that isn't just about going to see someone to talk to them, although that's very important, but recognizing that there's also a biological reason for it.
Yeah.
Because I do see a lot of women blame themselves. There's a lot of self-blame, you know, why am I not more patient, or, you know, why can't I be more loving, more kind? And, you know, why do I just feel so low? I don't feel motivated. You know, I know I should, you know, there's a lot of shoulds. I know I should eat better. I know I should exercise
more. Yeah, I should.
Yeah, there's a lot of that type of wording, but also at the same time, feeling they should do something better, but not physically or even mentally being able to get themselves out of bed or wake themselves up in the morning or even go to do all those things after work because they're just really low on energy. And fatigue is, you know, a very broad symptom, but if we don't actually ask all the symptoms that are relevant to the menopause or perimenopause, we could miss that. And so I see many women who are actually very you know, like yourself, very high in their area of work. You know, they are managers or they're CEOs, or, you know, they look after multiple other people, and yet they're feeling as if they're losing their edge or they're losing their ability to perform at work. And I think that's been a real struggle for them. And, you know, it's, and then, you know, when we start having a conversation and talking about the transition, you know, we talk about it in a very objective way because there are symptoms associated with it. And actually many women don't know how many symptoms there are.
Yeah.
And there are over 30 symptoms.
Yeah.
And so if we don't formally go through them, it's often very easily missed. So
Or even too late.
Too late,
I actually recently had somebody come to me and say, you know, they've been reading about the menopause post that you and I had been putting out and said, actually, Beth, I want to get ahead of it now. And if there was a message for anyone listening to this now, if you are able to get ahead of it now, or even if you're in the throes of it, or even if you're past it, because the lifestyle changes that we need to make to get ahead of it or survive it or thrive through it are the same. It's working on things like our sleep, working on things like the food that we eat, how we balance our blood sugar, how we move, how we interact with our partners and our friends. That social interaction is so important. And you know, the better we're able to look at our lives with that kind of holistic approach, the better we're able to navigate when things start to move biologically. And I think another important point you make is, you know, having people understand what those changes are, but also recognizing the symptoms. So heightening the awareness here in Hong Kong, I think, is really important. I was back in the UK just earlier this year, and menopause, perimenopause, the symptoms, the treatments, both medical and non-medical, are common parlance. Everyone is talking about it, and I would love to see that here in Asia. You know, it's like on the front page of the Daily Mail. Celebrities are talking about it. You know, you've got everyone from, this is where I will forget people's names, Michelle Obama, and Davinia Taylor, and, you know, really well-known people who are out there saying, I am going through this, see me, hear me. We need to change the rhetoric here in Hong Kong, and I think that's something you and I are passionate about doing.
Yeah, and I think also when I see both expat women, but also like local Chinese women, or, you know, women of Asian ethnicity, there are slightly different viewpoints. And, you know, sometimes, even though it's positive, right? Like often I do have women who come to me and say, oh, it was really positive, I didn't have any hot flashes, and I just had a very brief moment of insomnia, and, you know, I was totally fine about it. Like, I do hear those experiences, and that's great. But then going forward from there, then the next step is, just because you have no symptoms doesn't mean you don't think about your future risk. Because we do know that things like fracture risk and dementia risk is very, very high amongst women post-menopause. So what is it that we can now do today, you know, I mean, look, it's great. You don't have symptoms. We don't have to have that conversation. But let's have a conversation about your bone health. What are you doing? And most of the time they'll say, well, you know, I do, you know, different types of exercise. But they often don't talk about resistance training. You know, why do women need to do resistance training? And it is such a taboo because I guess, you know, you and I recently have seen how many more women are in the gym.
Yeah.
But before that, and it's in the generation of my parents, you know, now she's seven, my mom now 70, they didn't think about weightlifting.
Yeah.
They thought whilst walking and yoga and Pilates are great for general health, we still need to be a bit more specific about how we protect our bones. And now that we are more aware of fracture risk and what we can do about it in terms of lifestyle, we really can make some recommendations and have a proper assessment of whether or not you have a high risk. So high-risk women are women who actually have a smaller frame. They may actually have had a period of not having any period for a long time. Women who are in early menopause or they experience some type of surgical menopause are at high risk. So, you know, and or some women who are on medication, for example, long-term steroid medication, they're also at high risk. So we need to be able to assess those risks early on so we can have some strategies to prevent it. And while you may have low bone mass, there is still, and you're not osteoporotic, there's still a chance that lifestyle can make those changes for you. And, you know, that's just really one of the spectrums of conversation that I see. So, yeah, I don't know that if that's something that some of your clients think about.
I couldn't agree more. And I think women historically have been scared of resistance training or strength training. Not every woman, but I think, you know, if we were to generalize, because there's a fear of getting bulky or getting too big or getting too muscular. And what we see, or at least what I see, is actually the stronger you are, the better your posture, the slimmer you look because everything's nice and tight. And women genetically would find it very, very difficult to get bulky. We just don't have the testosterone levels, for example, to be able to build that type of muscle mass. But our biggest risks, as you've mentioned, are osteoporosis, osteopenia, also sarcopenia, which is the loss of muscle mass. And actually the stats show that you have a higher risk of death 2 years after a fracture than you do after breast cancer. So, you know, we all worry about cancer, and so we should, but actually within our control, we have this ability to prevent and prolong our lifespan and to do so in a really optimally healthy way.
And it's very good that you brought up that point between the actual mortality or the death rates between breast cancer and death from falls. That's actually really important because we have the messaging around breast cancer, and yes, it's devastating to have the diagnosis, but at the same time, the survival rate is also very high. It's greater if it's detected very early. Okay, so having said that, it's got to be early detection and very, very early stage breast cancer. The survival rate is greater than 95% in older age women. However, when you actually have a fall, and this is one of the issues, is that within the first 2 years, your mortality rate is actually much, much greater. And it's a result of all the other medical issues that tends to show up after a fall from a fracture. And so when you have low bone density, that puts you at much greater risk. So understanding that, you know, whilst breast cancer, brain health and heart health is important, that we also need to start the messaging and get women more active with resistance training if they can, and obviously after having a proper assessment to do it properly is important for their future health. So I you know, being sort of Asian descent, when I speak to a lot of older Asian women and I ask them, you know, what do you think about lifting? And this is really funny because when I first started lifting weights, I used to have people, you know, tell me, oh, you shouldn't lift so heavy, it's not good for women, you could hurt yourself.
Little did they know.
And I was like, I'm pretty sure, you know, if I went to the right person and, you know, I pay attention to my posture, you know, it's not about how heavy it is. It's about, you know, how much you're engaging your muscles while you're actually lifting heavy. That's my experience of it, you know, and touch wood, because I've listened to that. And if I know that there are certain days where my muscles are tighter or I'm more sore, I need to pay more attention to my technique rather than the weight. So I've always kind of, you know, not really listened to that type of messaging, mostly because I realized very early on with a family history, my mom actually had a very low impact fracture in her mid-40s. I realized that I was also at high risk because of the family history of osteoporosis, and she was subsequently diagnosed with osteoporosis. So I realized very early on, based on research, that maintaining muscle mass was very key for me. So in some ways I was fortunate enough that I had a head start, but you know, having seen and having that experience of starting with, seriously, I didn't even know how to lift.
This, by the way, is coming from someone that ended up doing a powerlifting competition and did really well. But I think what's super interesting about exercise is it can change throughout the month. The types of exercise that you feel good doing can change, you know, throughout your monthly cycle. Like in the first half of your cycle, you have higher levels of hormones, you feel like you can do anything, you feel like you can lift anything, and actually your body responds better. And then for many women, the second half of the month, the luteal phases, they have a little bit less energy, they might not be quite as resilient, and maybe, you know, this is a lesson for all of us to kind of listen and dial into that. And something that we talk about, particularly with our menopausal clients and patients, is as you get older, it's less about doing the high impact stuff, it's less about, or less about doing the endurance stuff, more about doing the heavy lifting stuff, because the body responds to that better. So it's interesting to see that on a month by month basis the body responds differently, and on a year by year basis the female body in particular responds better to different types of exercise.
And that's something which was new to me as well, because even though I knew that during the different hormonal phases that our recovery, our sleep patterns, and even our body temperature changes, you know, there wasn't really as much research into training around the cycles for women. And so with perimenopause, you're still getting your cycles, and at the same time though, you're still getting that estrogen fluctuation. So that's a huge gray area, and it's so personal for every woman.
Agree.
That every single woman that I ask questions about, and you know, how they actually feel during the different phases, everyone's very different. And I just know myself, because you know, I use an app and I use it to track my symptoms, I use it to track my sleep, and I can sort of get data indirectly, but also check in with myself and think, oh okay, I know that I'm in my sort of more active phase, so I can do more, I can start a new program, for example, or you know, I can really feel good about pushing it, lifting heavier. But then in the phases where I'm more tired, I'm not recovering so much, you know, it's not that I don't exercise, it's just that I do more technique work or
different intensity.
Low intensity, something fun, something enjoyable, you know, just to help my recovery. So I think this is the type of conversation that we're not really getting outside of, you know, the standard and the advice and on social media. So we really wanted to get women talking about their own experience, and this is the reason why we decided to create it as a group program, because what I realized that when I started recognizing things in myself and sharing that with you and with other women, they were much more open to also sharing that with about themselves too, and how, and some tips and how they managed to improve or get through it. So, you know, we wanted to structure it as well, because a lot of the information, whether it's related to diet or nutrition, can be very confusing. And there's so much out there, you know, what is the best evidence? And so if I know what the evidence is, then the next step is, how do I actually, you know, use that information? So that hand-holding, coaching, accountability, that's, you know, so important, because menopause is a time of life where we should be we can be embracing our next stage of health, and it's exciting, and we have so many different tools nowadays. And I'm very grateful that we are living longer, because I didn't know this, but you know, 100 years ago, you know, men and women, like, our average lifespan was, you know, up until our early 50s, and so we didn't have to live a long life without hormones, and we didn't have this knowledge that we could do something to live with better quality of life, and we're not doomed to having heart disease or, you know, Alzheimer's or losing our cognitive abilities or getting fractures.
Yeah. I would love them to change the name of menopause. Yeah. I just think that the name has negative connotations. Yeah. And I was reading somewhere that in an article that they called it sort of long-term decline of hormones or something, mm-hmm. which is probably a more accurate representation rather than something that sounds so final. And I think in Japanese the word is kanenki, which I'm probably mispronouncing, but it means second spring or new energy or rebirth. And for many women at this phase of life, maybe, you know, if you have kids, they're probably through school, you've got a bit more breathing space, you're not making packed lunches. You know, you should have this time where you can re-enjoy this new energy in this kind of second spring, if you like. And I think that was a big driver for you and I putting together this course, was to allow women to thrive through this phase, not just survive. You know, and it sounds cliche, but we really meant it. And so we thought long and hard about the areas that which were essentially tools within the toolkit that we could give to women to allow them to really go through this phase optimally. So, you know, we talk about nutrition, we talk about exercise, we talk about sleep and stress management. We talk about how to talk to your doctor, because I think that's a really, really important topic as well.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's a challenge, definitely, because doctors do have tools. It's just that they're not all in the one place, and doctors being very busy, they also don't necessarily have the time to, you know, go through all the journal articles or read all the fine print. And but yet there are training courses available now for doctors as well, which I actually gratefully went on, and it was it made so much sense, and it actually did a lot of it actually reviewed the last 20 years of the findings of the Women's Health Initiative, which was a huge study that was done to look at the menopause and hormone treatment for the menopause and whether or not that's appropriate. And, you know, there's no one size fits all, but at least with the right type of evidence-based information, and with the discussion, it's a shared decision that you make with your provider. And so I would have to say that, you know, don't give up if you're dismissed. The reason is because maybe that doctor wasn't necessarily aware of your symptoms. But, you know, go and talk to people and research around, you know, who are the doctors who are open to this and have been trained in this. Yeah. I think that's really important, because, you know, I have to admit that my undergraduate training was so long ago. And I remember the time, that date of when that journal article actually came out.
That was
20 years ago, and I was floored, because up until then we thought that, you know, and we still do now, because there's been a whole topic, and that's a whole separate topic of discussion around that. You know, up until then, actually, women were, without the HRT, women were put into mental asylums because they had depression, they had anxiety, that was due to a biological change in their bodies. And we knew at that time that it helped to alleviate that, and it protected their bones, and there were health benefits.
Yeah.
So it's not just about, you know, symptoms, but it's also, you know, what else? I mean, obviously HRT is not for anybody, and I think not for everybody necessarily. And, you know, we also want to change the terminology about hormone replacements, because we want to talk about it being menopause hormone therapy, maybe even a better name than that.
Yeah.
Because again, you know, we want to really start to, you know, have some ideas on how we can change this conversation, because like you and I look forward to my next stage in life, you know, when I'm not concerned about, you know, fertility. And periods, but you know, I'm looking forward to, you know, how can I contribute to society in a more meaningful way, and I'd like my brain to function better. You know, more consistently. I still have a brain. I want to sort of read. I want to enjoy the research and the knowledge. I'm a curious person. I love, you know, people might laugh at this, but I love reading journal articles on my days off.
I know this to be true, and Lorena is one of those doctors that's probably read more articles around menopause or any topic she's passionate about than anyone else I know. But I think for me, that was one of the things that's so reassuring, is that there is now all this research and all this data that supports the benefits of not just lifestyle changes, but hormone replacement, if that's a route that you decide to go down. And we talk about on our course that, you know, both, and we are not there to advise or prescribe or to tell anyone what to do, but we can talk about our own experiences, and we can talk about the pros and cons and the evidence that exists for all of the above. And I think that's one of the main drivers that we're trying to achieve, is, you know, provide information that's not readily available, provide information that's easily accessible, and you know, something you mentioned earlier, it's about providing information to all those women out there, but how to use that information and then how to apply it to yourself, because you know, information can be overwhelming. We live in an age where there's so much information, and I think what we're trying to do is distill that, make it usable and applicable.
Yeah, that's very true. So, you know, the commitment to that particular area is a 6-week weekly online discussion and presentation by Beth and myself. And also in between that time, we're going to have a closed social media group where people can sort of put up their questions and comments and also feedback. We're there to help support you through that digestion of the knowledge, and also if you have any things that you would like to make a change, we're there to support you with other women as well. So we really wanted to create that environment, because I think one of the things is, if we don't recognize the changes in ourselves, it's very difficult for us to ask for the support that's needed, whether it's with our partner or our family or in the workplace, or even from our colleagues. And I think it's a very confusing area for a lot of men as well, who are seeing women go through this, and often they feel quite helpless. So whilst this information is for women, we want to be able to help women also have that conversation with their partners and, you know, their male counterparts in their life, so that they can be supported better.
Yeah,
100%. Yeah. So if there are any questions around this before we launch the program, or if you just want to speak to either of us one-on-one, that's also an option. Not necessarily everyone would want to be doing groups or want an online discussion, but you know, some of you may prefer to come and see us in person here in Hong Kong if you're here, so we're open to that as well. Yeah, so that brings us to the close of our podcast today. And I'll put up the ways that you can contact Beth through her social media. And we'll also keep you up to date through our social media platforms as to when the program will be launching. And also just keep an eye out on potentially some webinars that we might be doing, depending on the requests that you have for us. So let us know your feedback, comments, and what you'd like to hear more of in the program or any other time, and we'll be there for you.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
Thank you, everyone. Hope you have a great day.
Bye. Bye.
This podcast is for information purposes only. Statements and views expressed in this podcast are not medical advice and is not intended to treat or diagnose any medical condition. This podcast and its producers disclaim any responsibility for adverse effects that result from the use of this information. Opinions of guests are their own and are not endorsed by this podcast. No guarantee is given regarding the accuracy of any statements or opinions. We do not make any representation or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. Both producers and guests may have direct or indirect interest in the products and services mentioned. If you think you have a medical condition, please consult a licensed physician. You can find us at anantawellbeing.com and follow us at anantawellbeing on Facebook and Instagram. If you like our podcast, please give us a 5-star review to help other like-minded people find us.